Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott, fresh off their trip to beautiful Regina, Saskatchewan for the 2025 CFL Combine. Fellas, what did I miss out on?
You missed out on all the fun, Justin. The thing I like absolute best about Combine is the fact that all of the people around the league, including the coaches, the scouts, everybody who's there in person, is just in the best mood, right? It is March. They are relaxed. They are gregarious. They are friendly. Well, actually, that's not true. There was one person who wasn't very friendly. But by and large, everybody else was super friendly.
Who was it?
Super nice. Well, we're about to talk about him in the opening segment. So we'll leave it for that. But just about everybody else was super kind, responsive, respectful, which was great. It's always nice to chat with personnel people, with coaches, when they're not under the stress, right, of trying to get that win that next week. And March is a great time to do that. So I was super thankful to all the CFL staff members, all of the volunteers who helped out with this event. That's something that one CFL staffer mentioned to me, is when they come to Regina, they get amazing support from the volunteer community. So shout out not only to the staff members, of course, who did a good job running this combine, but all of the volunteers who helped make it happen and give the athletes there an opportunity to shine and give coaches and personnel people the opportunity to do some really valuable evaluation ahead of the 2025 CFL draft.
Yeah, it was an extremely well-run event this year in Regina. Every year they do this format, I think they tweak it a little bit more and they perfect it a little bit more. This was the best that I've been to. And to Hodge's point, I probably fulfill my yearly quota of laughs just in Combine alone. It is a riot at times with all the people we get to see, with all the smiles on everybody's faces. So it's my favorite event of the entire year.
The big three are a large source of those laughs every year, fellas. I would imagine that was no different in 2025.
The big three Down Nation. That's what we're calling it.
If you know, you know. Let's get to it, boys. We're discussing risers and fallers from the CFL Combine that you two took in live.
The Toronto Argonauts finally confirming their coaching staff.
Two 2025 CFL draft prospects earning invitations to local NFL pro days.
Trey Lance, yes, Trey Lance being added to the Saskatchewan Roughriders negotiation list.
A Canadian offensive lineman retiring at age 25.
Demario Houston's domestic violence charge being dropped.
And the University of Guelph unveiling a new logo. Yes, it is newsworthy. Even to those who don't want to hear it. But first,
Edmonton general manager Ed Hervey caused a bit of a stir at the CFL Combine when you asked him about comments Eugene Lewis made after signing with the Ottawa Redblacks. The quote that stuck out was Hervey declaring, quote, "I don't know any superstar players in the CFL," closed quote. That led to the CFL Players Association formally requesting an apology from Hervey and sending letters to the league office and Elks president Chris Morris. Dunk, what are the takeaways from this situation?
Just stunned, man. Like, I couldn't believe when he said it. And for anybody in the CFL world, I can't imagine you haven't, but if you haven't read his comments, we have the full piece up at 3downnation.com. Just Google Ed Hervey and superstars, and I imagine it's going to come up if you want to find it really quick. So the genesis of this was I was asking Ed Hervey about the lack of communication with Geno Lewis, because Lewis had come out in the media and said, I believe it was on the Sports Cage in Regina, Saskatchewan, 620 CKRM, that Ed Hervey did not even talk to him throughout the entire free agent process. So I wanted to give Hervey a chance to say his side and share his perspective on it. And at the start, it seemed like it was going to be a quick answer based on his words. But then there was a lot of context there, which we appreciated at the CFL winter meetings when Hervey talked about his potential approach with a player like Eugene Lewis. And then even in this instance, where Hervey was explaining the process of him talking to Lewis's agent, but not actually Lewis himself and then providing further context, at least for his line of thinking. You know, sometimes, and this happens a lot to you, Hodge, in Winnipeg, you can ask a question to Mike O'Shea and he doesn't say very much, which I can understand why, because then you potentially don't get yourself in hot water like Hervey has with a lot of people that love the Canadian Football League. But I think from Hervey's standpoint, when you do provide this context, it helps people get a better grasp of what you're doing with the football team and the decisions that you're making, especially being a general manager. So I appreciated a lot of it, but what the CFL world did not appreciate was Hervey stating that there are no superstar players in the CFL. He later sort of backed it up in terms of what his definition of a superstar player would be, or a superstar person. And really his list is Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali. Now, my definition is different. All due respect to Hervey, when we talk about these sports conversations, we're all going to have different opinions. To me, when you talk about guys like Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan, those are global icons. When we're talking about a superstar, it's a superstar in the space or the league that you're talking about. And when I thought about this right afterwards, you know, I would say that G. Roy Simon was a superstar while playing for the BC Lions, because anywhere he would go in BC, he would get mobbed by fans. I would even say Travis Lule was a superstar because of the outpouring after he retired. JC, I'm sure you can speak to that even better than I can. I would say Warren Moon, going back in the day, was a superstar. For me as a young kid, Doug Flutie was not just a superstar, he was superhuman. But this is all just, to me, the real issue that I can see people having, and specifically players in the league, are the ones with the Edmonton Elks. Think if you're a player there, guys, and your general manager says this, and you literally have, let's say, for example, Canadian quarterback Trey Ford, who is a world-class athlete by his measurables and testing, and is a really intriguing quarterback with upside, and your GM says there are no superstar players in the CFL, like he just doesn't think there are any or could be any, because to get to Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan status is absolutely rarefied air. It, I would think, would make you question who is your boss. And I think that's why the Canadian Football League Players Association came out asking Hervey for an apology and sent letters to Morris, as you mentioned, and the league office, essentially condemning these comments, because it's, I can't think of the right word right now, fellas, but it doesn't help the league business, for lack of a better term.
Well, it hurts the branding, right? It hurts the image of the league when somebody who works within the league for a team as a general manager makes a comment like this. And as you laid it out, Dunk, essentially, Ed Hervey's definition of a superstar is one of the most, like, 15 famous people ever to live, which I think is a very narrow definition of superstar, but it's Ed Hervey's definition of superstar. And by his definition, I would agree with him. There are no superstars in the CFL. There's never been a CFL player who's reached the prominence of somebody like Muhammad Ali, like Michael Jackson, some of the people he listed. Technically, if we want to get semantic, and I think that this argument unfortunately has come down to semantics, you could argue that The Rock is in that category, and The Rock did in fact play in the CFL, so that is at least one person who's maybe on that level, but The Rock is not known as a CFL player. For the record, I looked up the Merriam-Webster dictionary, and this is going to be a very exciting podcast, gentlemen, because I'm about to read from the dictionary. You're welcome to all of our listeners. If you're operating heavy machinery, please be careful not to fall asleep. The definition of superstar is a star, which, by the way, is a terrible start. You should not start with part of the word that you're defining in the definition. That feels really redundant. Merriam-Webster, get better! But their definition is a star, as in sports or the movies, who is considered extremely talented, has great public appeal, and can usually command a high salary. And if that's the definition for Merriam-Webster, then I do think that there are several CFL players who fit that mold, right? I would put Trey Ford in that category. I would put Nathan Rourke in that category. I would put Brady Oliveira in that category. There are lots of players who would fit, active players in the CFL, who would fit that definition to me. But I appreciate that, again, Ed Hervey's definition of superstar might be a little bit. Because, no, there are no players in the CFL who, if they were walking the streets of Indonesia or Bangladesh or Paraguay...
Hold up, what about Brady Oliveira rescuing dogs in Bali?
Well, he's in
Bali. He might get recognized.
Dunk, do you know what country Bali is closest to?
Australia.
It's close-ish. Close-ish, okay. Admittedly, I had to look it up earlier this offseason. I knew approximately where Bali was, but I didn't know exactly where Bali was.
It's just north of Australia, bro. I'm just messing with you, though.
It's in the ballpark. It's kind of northwest. But now that I've said that, I'm sure we're going to get comments from people roasting us for a lack of geographical knowledge. Dictionary and geography. We're really killing it so far this episode. But to get back to the point at hand here, I loved how Ed Hervey started his answer with the following quote. I'm not going to go on a rant. I'm going to answer as quickly as I possibly can. And then he proceeded to kind of rant. Not as much as he did during the offseason winter meetings in January. The only thing I will say to Ed's credit is, Justin, your first question was specifically asking about Geno Lewis not having communication from the Elks during the free agent period. And that is in line, I think, with what Ed did say in January. He said, I'm not going to talk to Eugene Lewis because there's no point in me offering him money now if he is just going to go to the market and see what his value is. And Ed more or less said, I want Eugene Lewis to come back to us when he knows what his value is, and then we can see if we want to match it. And if not, we'll part ways with a handshake. That is, I think, what more or less took place. Geno Lewis might have felt slighted by that. It seems as though his ego is bruised, at least somewhat, by the way things unfolded in Edmonton. But I also don't take issue necessarily with how Ed Hervey went about his business. He made it clear he was not prioritizing the receiver position, at least for American players, and he didn't do that. So I don't necessarily have a problem with what Ed Hervey did along the way with his actions. The thing that I think is very head-scratching is some of the way in which he explained these actions after the fact. I've twice asked him about his contract status before, once when he was in Hamilton, once at Edmonton, and both times he just refused to answer the question. So I know that he is comfortable with simply saying to members of the media, I'm not answering your question, which is like, okay, fine. That's a bit of a kick in the butt, but whatever. I'm not entitled, right? The media's not entitled to having any question we ask answered. And I accept that. I respect that. It's part of the process. It's what it is. He did not do that at any point with his Eugene Lewis question. I think you asked him 5 questions, Dunk. At no point did he refuse to answer or try to sidestep. He gave you the answer, which we appreciate. I don't think he did a great job of answering them, though.
If there's anything that Hervey can be criticized for in this situation, I think it is that. He gave us too much information. And as much as we love that from a media perspective, I think from a PR perspective, when you are the Edmonton Elks or the CFL, there is too much transparency at times, right? If you're going to offer up all that information and all those juicy quotes, you're going to work yourself into trouble. Eventually, he did not have to elaborate to the extent that he did. And I know there's always going to be some people when an article of this nature comes out saying, well, they're pulling the juicy quotes. Did it really have to be written? The story was dead. First of all, this was the first time that Ed Hervey really got a chance to answer these questions when somebody specifically called him out within the league. And secondly, if a chicken plucks itself, slathers itself in barbecue sauce, and throws itself onto your barbecue, why are you mad at me for cooking the chicken, right? Ed Hervey bears some responsibility there. Now, what I will say is, unlike you two, who I think lean to the side of these being inappropriate comments, I'm fully on board with Ed Hervey's definition of a superstar. And I said, when Eugene Lewis called himself a superstar, that there's not really any superstars in the CFL. I was there first, guys. Where is my article? Where is my letter from the CFLPA? Why is this not happening to me? And frankly, I don't think there are many superstars in football in general. It's not a superstar-driven sport. There are a few, but there are probably less superstars in football than there are teams in the NFL, right? It's not a situation like you might have in hockey or basketball where almost every team has a superstar. Guys wear helmets. There's a lot of turnover year to year. Careers are very short. It's also not a global sport. For all I want to talk about the international game, it doesn't have the same appeal internationally as some other sports do. And so that all contributes to the fact that you can't have real superstars. And for the CFL context, there's maybe a couple of players that can fit the definition regionally, perhaps, and you can nitpick there. But overall, Ed Hervey to me was not out of line. And frankly, I think guys like Geno Lewis come off really poorly for their criticism and their complaints and their constant tweeting about this situation. I don't think it's a good look for them. And while I understand the CFLPA's desire to protect their membership, I also think it's a poor look for them to be like, we are superstars, please like us. Like, that to me just undermines your product further. If you are a superstar, you don't have to demand to be called one.
By definition, I've never done that because I don't have to. That's why I've never called myself a superstar in this program. That's why.
International superstar John Hodge.
Hodge,
Other people are saying it. See?
Hodge, can you give us the dictionary definition of superstar again?
It was a star as in sports or the movies, who is considered extremely talented, has great public appeal, and can usually command a high salary.
So to me, that in and of itself is a definition of a superstar in the genre, sport, or league that you're playing in. So that's where this debate is great.
Is there U Sports superstars then? Is there superstars in your local rec hockey league?
There's all stars. Definitions are different, though. Like different I said off the top, superstar. There's global icons when you talk about Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, you know, that list, however you want to go. But I think there are superstars within a league or within a space or realm or however you want to describe it. I'm just saying that this debate, I think, is one that is great. And honestly, the Canadian Football League should send some flowers to Ed Hervey, because as much as we love the draft, fellas, he has made people talk about the CFL in a passionate way in a time that is usually pretty dead, as we know from a news standpoint, around the Canadian Football League. And there are some people that will tell me personally that, you know, when the Grey Cup is played after that, it seems like the CFL goes dark, and even their broadcast partner, TSN, for the most part, goes dark in the off season. They do cover it here and there, so I'm not necessarily throwing shade. I'm just telling you what I've been told. So I think the CFL should commend Ed Hervey for these comments, because it has created a unique debate around the Canadian Football League, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. I respect what JC said. I don't necessarily agree with it because my definition is different. Like I said, when I think of a superstar, I think of that person within the given league. Like, there are stars in my nephew's hockey league because they're the best players in the league. I don't necessarily want to say they're superstars. I don't want to take it to the level. But I think when we're talking about pro sports and specifically the CFL, that there are superstars. Darian Durant, I've seen it firsthand. Anywhere that guy goes in Saskatchewan that I've seen, he's mobbed for autographs still. And it's over a decade after that Grey Cup championship. So my definition is that I respect that Ed Hervey's isn't, and I also respect your take, JC's, and everybody else's. But honestly, like, there's some people calling for Ed Hervey to be fined, which I can also understand that as well, because you have McLeod Bethel-Thompson, who was a quarterback with the Elks and has been in this league for a long time, who criticizes officials, and he's been fined multiple times, and he's been fined for bringing the league into disrepute or whatever the fancy word was that they used. Well, how is this not similar in a way if it affects the business? But honestly, if you look at it through the lens of marketing. And it's great because you have a lot of outlets talking about this that wouldn't otherwise be talking about the CFL in late March.
I want to say that I'm a star or superstar in my rec curling league. And that's because I'm probably not the best player in the league, but I do yell the loudest and I use the most profanity. So people know who I am. They know who I am.
You're not skilled. Wasn't superstar part of the definition being skilled?
Oh, wow. I would say I'm extremely skilled at volume and profanity. That fits the bill. That fits the bill. The other thing I'll add here is that the two examples that Merriam-Webster gives for superstars are Madonna and Puff Daddy. And I think in light of recent reporting, we should probably update the second one, maybe to a different individual. But regardless, I agree that if a fine is issued, which arguably it should be, hopefully it is announced publicly, because we know that when Wade Miller criticized CFL officiating during the Labor Day Classic, we were told that fines towards like senior executives in the leagues were not publicized. So I'm curious if, in fact, Ed Hervey is fined, if we will learn of that through back channels, or if that will be publicly announced, because there is precedent, at least for a club president and CEO, for there to be no announcement. I don't know if there will be an announcement. If, in fact, Ed Hervey is fined, we don't yet know. Presumably, the league is currently investigating. The 2025 CFL Combine was held in Regina over the weekend, bringing together close to 75 prospects. JC, you and I were there to take in all the action. What were your takeaways?
Well, as I mentioned off the top, I thought it was an incredibly well-run event by the CFL, certainly the most well-run that I have been able to witness in person and since this new multi-day format was adopted. And I thought the crop of athletes that were in attendance was also the deepest that I have ever seen. This draft class might not necessarily have the same top end, top two or three picks necessarily as some other years, but I think it's incredibly deep throughout the middle. I think you watch that field when they've strapped the pads on, and there's not a single person you can point to and say, well, they're not a player at all. They've embarrassed themselves this week. The level of competition has gotten better every single year. The level of testing has gotten better every single year. These guys are far more professionalized and polished, better trained coming into the combine. They're not just rolling off the couch in the middle of the offseason to come and do these tests. They are in peak physical condition and they are ready for the interviews. All the teams remark how polished these guys are. So it's really good for our league as a whole to see that growth from those entering the league and bringing the product level up as a whole. I've got some risers and fallers that I wrote in my article. I'll give you the floor first, Hodge, to talk about your overall thoughts before we get into the nitty-gritty, but I thought it was a really good group overall.
I agree, and I think the exciting thing, if you're a CFL fan who maybe doesn't know a lot about the draft or maybe you don't usually follow it super closely, the main criticism I hear of this event every year, whether it's the combine or the draft itself, is, well, it's just about a bunch of offensive linemen. There's nothing exciting about offensive linemen. It's just about the O-line. And the O-line is the weakest positional group, I think, in this entire draft. It certainly was at the combine. There were a couple of very talented offensive line prospects who were not at the combine. And by the way, I do think there were still some good offensive linemen in attendance. That being said, the D-line group is super strong. The DB group is super strong. I thought a couple of linebackers shot up the board. The receiver group is also not super strong. But we have quarterbacks right this year. This is arguably the strongest class of quarterbacks that has ever been in a single CFL draft. And so if you're somebody who maybe loves following the NFL draft to see where the star quarterbacks end up, this might kind of be the CFL draft for you. We're not going to see six of the top nine picks used on offensive linemen. My projection is that we're probably going to see in the top 20, my prediction will be three offensive linemen taken, which is pretty much in line with what you'd see in the NFL draft, which is never accused of being simply an offensive line parade. The other thing I'll say is the numbers back up 100% what scouts were telling us, what our own eyeballs were telling us There were 10 players at this event who ran 4.55 or faster. Some of those guys, three of them weighed over 200 pounds, which is legit speed. Ope Oshinubi ran 4.41. That was the fastest 40-yard dash, running back out of Alberta. He did that at 6 foot and a half and 219 pounds. Like, there are a ton of guys in the NFL who can't run 4.41 at that size, or who can run 4.41 but aren't nearly that heavy. That is an exceptional size. We also had a vert over 40 inches. We had a broad over 11 feet. We had multiple shuttles under 4 seconds. And we had almost two dozen three cones under 7 seconds. And you might not know as a, you know, if you're not a hardcore combine person, which is totally fine, you might not know necessarily what all these drills are, but suffice to say that those are kind of the classic benchmarks of, like, this is what separates a good time from an exceptional time. And we had prospects hitting all of those benchmarks, including Max von Moldorfer, who put up 34 reps on the bench. That's not like a crazy insane elite number, but it's a very, very good number. And there were multiple players who did over 30 on the bench. So I thought this was the best conditioned group of athletes I've seen at the combine. This is the most athletic group overall. And I think that bodes well for the future of Canadian talent. You know, talking to talent evaluators, I think coming out of the pandemic, there was a little bit of a lag effect where guys had clearly not spent as much time playing, as much time in the gym. And to me, it showed that this group had a full 4 years, right? This group was in college from 2021 all the way to 2024, and getting those true 4 years in the gym developing, I think we're starting to see that rising tide, and hopefully it continues into 2026 and beyond.
I'm glad you brought up Max von Moldorfer, because I'll start there in terms of my list of guys who I thought really helped themselves this weekend in Regina. Going into this process, I saw von Moldorfer as, you know, certainly a very competent player, but lacked a little length, didn't have a whole lot of pass rush upside, maybe a bubble late round pick. I think he is almost certainly going to get drafted at this point and may go in the mid rounds, because athletically he showed things that I just didn't expect from him. Not only the 34 reps on the bench, I think if there was one thing you were going to bank on, it was that he was going to be strong. This is a guy who won the gold medal at the Junior Pan American Championships for weightlifting in 2023, a four-time Canadian national weightlifting champion. The dude is strong as a bull. But then he goes out at 290 pounds and he goes 34 inches in the vertical and 4.96 in the 40, along with really good results in all the other tests. And you look at that compared to Darian Newell, who we have been praising and talking about NFL interests on, and those are virtually identical across the board in terms of his results. Now, von Moldorfer isn't quite there in terms of his level of twitch. The tape is a little bit different, but then he goes out and shows in the pass rush drills that he's got more wiggle than people expected, that he's a better athlete than people knew about. He even took some reps at fullback, where teams think he's athletic enough to potentially cut down his weight now that he's not going to be weightlifting full time and play on the offensive side of the ball if they wanted him to. I think he really helped himself overall this week. He was my biggest winner by far, and there was a lot of guys who I thought helped themselves.
Fellas, we've gone this far, but you haven't talked about the Canadian quarterbacks. What's the buzz on the group?
I think that the hope was that one of the two quarterbacks, it was Jonathan Senecal and Arnaud Desjardins of Montreal and Laval, respectively. Funny, by the way, that they were at the combine together, considering they've played the last 4 years desperately trying to outdo one another as part of one of the best rivalries in Canadian sport. And I thought both of these guys tested really well, better than I thought they would. Jonathan Senecal, 6 foot and a half, 201. He ran a 4.68, which is legit. He also had one of the best shuttle times, which I think speaks to his elusivity in the pocket, his ability to make guys miss, which of course we saw on full display with the Caravan. And Arnaud Desjardins at 6'4", 214, ran a 4.7 flat with a 10 foot, 1 inch broad jump. He's got some athleticism, some power there. Unfortunately, on the field, I don't think these guys cemented themselves as CFL quarterbacks. Do I think both will be in a camp this year? Yes. I thought Desjardins maybe looked a little better through the air, but given what I saw myself and speaking to some sources, I don't think these guys disappointed, but I also don't think they blew the doors off. If either guy was looking to take that step and go from, let's say, a round 7-8 pick to being a mid-round pick, joining Taylor Elgersma out of Wilfrid Laurier and Curtis Work out of Indiana as two top quarterbacks, I don't think they did that. I don't think their stock necessarily went down, but I don't think their stock went up.
Yeah, I wouldn't have them pegged currently as draft picks. I think the overarching theme of the conversations that I had with sources was these quarterbacks are better than anything we've seen in recent years. They're still not good enough, though, right? These guys still aren't quite at the tier where you're going to be spending draft capital and bringing them in for a legitimate shot. The two guys who weren't there are absolutely in that category, but Senecal and Desjardins, you're hoping to bring them in as an undrafted non-counter, as a camp arm, that type of thing.
Two guys I do want to highlight as risers. Again, the two weakest positions in this draft arguably are offensive line and receiver. So I've been looking at who can that riser be at both spots, because the top two receivers are certainly Keelan White out of Montana and Damian Alford out of Utah. Mm-hmm. The rest of the receivers were at this event, and to me, the guy who helped himself the most was Ethan Jordan, who put up over 3,000 yards at Wilfrid Laurier. I think some people came into this event going, okay, obviously Ethan Jordan had a great collegiate career, but that has a lot to do with catching passes from Taylor Elgersma, maybe less to do with his own success. Well, he weighed in at 177 pounds, which is 12 pounds heavier than he was listed on Laurier's website, and he ran a 4.44. 40-yard dash, which is very good, even for someone as light as he is. There are a lot of receivers in the CFL who play, Americans as well, who play at close to 177 pounds and do not run a 4.44. I thought he helped himself there. The other guy I will highlight is Arvin Hosseini out of UBC. I think after Tiger Shanks, a recent addition to the draft, the offensive line group kind of needs that guy to pop off. Eric Anderson out of Western could have been that guy. Unfortunately, he suffered a concussion on the first day of on-field drills, which regrettably, I think, will lower his draft stock. Arvin Hosseini not only tested well, he was by far and away, in my opinion, the best O-lineman in the one-on-ones. I think that he certainly will be moving up people's boards after Combine, especially, again, considering that those positions will be at a premium just because there's not nearly the depth that there are at some of the other spots, mm-hmm. like defensive line or defensive back.
In terms of some guys who may have hurt themselves, I think you can easily look at some of the poor testers, guys like Harold Masson out of the University of Montreal, guys like Jahari Hastings from Wilfrid Laurier as people who may have tested themselves out of the draft. But I think the biggest loser was a guy who really didn't take part in very much at all this weekend, Isaiah Bagna, the defensive end from BYU. Now, to his credit, Bagna tested 2 days before the combine at the Big 12 Pro Day and actually posted dramatically better results at the CFL Combine. Guys typically don't test on that quick a turnaround, so kudos to him for doing that. But then after testing, he essentially said, I'm not going to participate in anything else. I think a lot of people were surprised by that. And while he wasn't the only prospect to say he wasn't going to take part in the padded portion of the Combine, he was noticeably less present and vocal than some of those other guys who were very engaged throughout the entire process. A number of people I talked to had some questions about his attitude and commitment to the CFL. And when you look at his numbers, yeah, they were better than the Big 12 Pro Day, but they're pretty average across the board. And certainly his numbers were disqualifying by NFL standards. So a guy who's definitely going to have to play in the CFL, I think, if you leave any questions about your personality at this event, that it's going to really, really hurt you. And for the number 4 ranked prospect on the last scouting bureau, I think he's going to fall down some boards because of his athletic testing and because some people came away from this event thinking he was big timing the CFL.
One last thing I want to add on this is Craig Smith was in attendance at the CFL Combine. Craig Smith spent the better part of 20 years working in personnel in the CFL. He lives in Regina full-time, was diagnosed with cancer in 2017, and has since done full-body radiation and 4 rounds of chemotherapy. It was fantastic seeing him there in person. The 68-year-old did not expect to be alive to attend another one of these events, or at least be healthy enough to attend one in person. And it was so awesome chatting with Craig and his wife, Kathy, and also seeing people walk by, right? And he was taking pictures with coaches, personnel people. People have known him for 20 years. And to a person, you can't find someone in the CFL who people speak as glowingly about as Craig. It was so great that he was there. And if you haven't already, please read Rob Vanstone's article on Craig being at the Combine. It's a great article, and it's about a great guy. So it was awesome to see Craig Smith there, get the chance to catch up with him. As we all know, cancer is a terrible, terrible disease that has claimed far too many far too soon. It was great that Craig is kicking cancer's ass and was able to show up at the Combine and enjoy the festivities with everyone. It was great.
Yeah, on that note, it was my first time actually meeting Craig in person, and he's somebody that I grew up idolizing because, similar to myself, when he was at UBC, he got his start in football coaching Pee Wee at the Westside Warriors, which is exactly the same thing I did. So when I wanted to get involved in football, Craig Smith was the guy I had circled. And I only ever met him once on a Zoom call waiting for an interview on the Rod Peterson show. And I had mentioned that story to him. This was probably 3, 4, 5 years ago now that I had told him that. And we'd never met in person. As I'm walking out the door at the Combine, Craig Smith looks at me and he goes, "Westside Warriors." And we had a nice little chat. So could not meet a nicer guy.
Craig Smith is a beauty, man. My time with him dates all the way back to when I was at the University of Guelph. This is not just to get a plug in about the university, but he was scouting and he actually came and did, I don't know what you want to call it. I hate talking about myself, but like private workout at the university with me, looking at me to potentially convert me from quarterback to receiver, which is a whole other topic. But, you know, I started that relationship with him, and he's a guy that just loves any Canadian football. Like, you know, on a Saturday, he'll have multiple screens going with the U Sports game and the CFL game that's going on. I know he had his New York Yankees hat on there at the Combine, and the pictures that I saw, he absolutely loves his New York Yankees, which I can't understand because the Toronto Blue Jays are Canada's team. But anyways, I give him guff about that all the time. And I've seen him in so many places, you know, along our travels, me covering Canadian football and him scouting it. And then even afterwards, like I saw him at the Regina Rams, Alberta Golden Bears game last year in person. And it was great to see him be able to be out and about, as you guys alluded to. So, you know, I know we're talking about superstars and that kind of stuff with Ed Hervey, but Craig Smith in CFL circles is definitely a legend. We need more of those people who love the Canadian Football League for what it is. And Craig and his wife, Kathy, certainly don't, not just even the Canadian Football League, Canadian football in general, absolutely loves it at all levels, as JC spoke to, going back to the high school level too.
JC, you asked all 9 CFL teams if they're planning to spend the new salary cap of just over $6 million. What did you learn?
Well, I think I learned some really fascinating nuggets from the different ways in which teams answered that question. And there was never any two teams that answered it the same way. I think if you were to generalize, most teams' response to that was, no, we're currently sticking to our own budget, but we will spend more if we had to, or if we have to, I should say. But there were a couple of really interesting nuggets, the most notable of which I thought was from Hamilton Tiger Cats general manager Ted Gavaya, who, when I asked him, now that the dust has settled, are you going to use this new money? His response was, is the dust settled? I'm not aware that it is. Implying that the new CFL salary cap, the increased money that has been reported and announced by the league, is not set in stone yet, in his opinion. And he believes it could still be taken by the CFLPA and applied in different areas. Now, Ted also noted that he had not spoken to the PA about that, that there was still more to be determined. He was not speaking from a position of knowledge on that. But it is notable that there are teams within this league that still don't trust that new money, let alone deciding whether or not to adjust their budgets to use it, who believe it is not yet real that the salary cap has been increased. Here we are a month basically from the start of training camps, and there are teams in this league who are not certain about the salary cap. That is a truly shocking situation.
Not quite as shocking as Ed Hervey's comments, but I actually felt like you could get the best reflection of how a team was approaching the CFL salary cap, not necessarily by the words, but by the reaction and body language when these series of salary cap questions were being asked. And full credit to the general managers who answered it in a more open way. There were some who answered it in a much more curt or short way. So you could tell that there was already a budget in place, perhaps was even below the original 2025 salary cap. I don't want to go over the place with numbers here, confuse people, but you could just easily see, you know, I don't want to say who was freewheeling and spending over $6 million, but, you know, when Ed Hervey answered the question, essentially it was like, yeah, we're going to spend to, you know, what we need to be competitive. But, you know, on the other side of this, and none of the general managers flat out said this, but some of the sense that I got was just because you spend money or all the way up to the cap, that doesn't guarantee you being competitive. I think Danny Maciocia was kind of the closest one to say that, right? And I'm with him because he said, I think it's the last 2 years that, at least from his perspective and the numbers that he's seen, the Alouettes have the lowest payroll in the league. Now, for the uninitiated, there's the salary cap ceiling, but there's also a salary cap floor. So you have to spend within $600,000 of whatever the salary cap ceiling is, whether Ted Gavaya or other teams in the league know it or not. So that herein to me lies the riddle. Are teams that are on the lower end of the salary cap planning to spend to the floor of the original number, or are they planning to spend to the floor of the $6 million and change number? Fellas, like, imagine having to deal with that if you're a CFL general manager and if you're a first time CFL general manager.
Presumably, the floor of the old number was somewhere in and around $4.8 million because the cap was going to be 5.4, and we agreed that the floor is $600,000 under the cap. If the new cap is $6 million, that means teams have to get to 5.4? Yeah, 5.4 this season, which is essentially the old cap. Now, it's possible to do this even in December, if you want to, right? If you get to the end of the year and you realize, oh, we've only spent $4.9 million. We need to spend another $500,000 to be salary floor compliant for 2025. It's not hard to go to your starting quarterback and say, hey, you're set to make $500,000 against the cap next season. We would like to sign you to a fresh contract right now that gives you a $300,000 signing bonus and we'll pay the rest of your deal out in salary, playtime incentives, whatever. So I do expect, depending on how the money shakes out this year, to have a slew of veteran re-signings and restructurings in late November and December as some teams get floor compliant. Though, as JC laid out, there are some teams who apparently don't even know what the cap is, which is wild considering that it's 2025 and not like 1968. In the Wild West of all things CFL, it is wild how little direction there seems to be in this regard.
My expectation is also that we will see the teams spend later in the calendar year rather than spending it on players early or adding pieces now. If you're going to get up to that cap ceiling, it's because you're going to be taking re-signings for 2026 or restructuring contracts for 2026 and putting that money, that signing bonus money, against this year's cap with the extra space that you have. Teams like Saskatchewan, I think were very clear about their intention to do something of that nature with Jeremy O'Day. I think being among the most definitive in saying that, hey, when this initially happened, it didn't change our plans in the short term, but in the long term, we intend to spend all the money that's available. I think that's an indication that that will be their strategy. But there's other teams who simply have not shifted, right? Kyle Walters from Winnipeg was already on the record as saying that he would only spend to the new cap floor because he doesn't trust the increased salary cap, that his budget had not changed. I asked him if that situation had changed since he made those comments. He said, no, it has not. So as of right now, you can expect the Bombers in a year when they are hosting the Grey Cup to spend only to the salary cap floor. I'm sure that is news that a lot of fans in Winnipeg aren't going to be too thrilled about.
You can tell by the reaction on social media. And how different is it, the juxtaposition, fellas? You have the BC Lions spending whatever Amar Doman wanted to spend on the team and the Grey Cup Festival and everything else, which is great. In a year where the Lions were hosting the Grey Cup in Vancouver, and then juxtapose that with the Blue Bombers in a year where they're hosting it, are looking like they're just going to get to the floor. Now, that doesn't necessarily determine whether you win or not. Just ask, Rick Campbell in BC. But it is interesting nonetheless.
Or Danny Machocha, who won a championship, it seems, spending less money than anybody else.
That was such a weird flex to me. Danny Machocha going up and being like, we pay people less than everybody, and we're still good.
But that's a great flex if you're the GM.
Well, it's a flex.
You can go to your owner and say, hey, we are responsible with our money, and we put a competitive team on the field. That's not only competitive, but they're
also trying to attract
Cup.
Players, though. You're also trying to attract players, though, and saying we pay less than everybody else is a strange way to do that. Fair. 2021 third overall NFL draft pick quarterback Trey Lance has been added to the Saskatchewan Roughriders negotiation list. The 24-year-old is currently a free agent and has a family tie to the CFL. Do you think Lance will ever sign a CFL contract?
You know, my first thought relates back to the salary cap conversation in Jeremy O'Day. Is he saving $600,000 on the 2025 salary cap to be able to throw at Trey Lance?
Maybe.
I'm obviously joking here, okay?
Maybe.
Do I think that Lance will ever sign a CFL contract? That, quite honestly, as much as I would love to see how that would play out, is at this point a long shot for a number of reasons. Top among them, Trey Lance has earned approximately $34 million while playing in the NFL. Yes, he's currently a free agent, and yes, he does have a family tie. Carlton Lance played 13 games for the Green and White in 1993 as a defensive back. He's actually pretty good. Scored a couple of defensive touchdowns, had three interceptions, a couple sacks, a bunch of tackles, played special teams as well. I'd actually like to ask Lance how come he didn't continue his CFL career, because it was only just that one season in Saskatchewan. But nonetheless, it's definitely a long shot. And I've already heard from different people on both sides of this. Some think Trey Lance could do really well if he came up and played in the Canadian Football League, and others aren't too sure because of what's gone on in the NFL and then the lack of actual real live game action that he's had, largely due to COVID and his final season before he entered the draft at North Dakota State, where he only played one game. So he had one really great season in 2019, went undefeated, 16-0, rushed for 1,100 yards, threw for over 2,700 yards. Guys, he threw, I think it was 28 touchdowns and wasn't even picked once. Now, there's got to be some luck for that to happen in there, but for a multitude of reasons, it hasn't happened at the NFL level. And one time, Winnipeg Blue Bombers neglister Brock Purdy, who was Mr. Irrelevant in the same draft that Lance was taken third overall in, that the San Francisco 49ers traded up to third overall to take Lance in. Purdy ended up being the franchise guy as the last pick in the NFL draft. So in draft season, it shows that nothing is an exact science as much as some of these guys want to act like they're experts it's a crapshoot. Okay, and I think that's where it would be with Trey Lance coming up here. If he ever did to the Canadian Football League, there's no guarantee he's going to be great. And we've seen high-profile, dare I say, superstar players from the NFL, Chad Ochocinco among them, Johnny Manziel would be another one, come up to the CFL and struggle. But I would really love to see how this potential experiment works out.
Yeah, I'm skeptical that Trey Lance would do well in the CFL. That being said, he's 24, right? For context, Curtis Rourke is 24. He's in his draft year right now. The same is true for Jonathan Senecal, who we talked about a little bit earlier from the Montreal Caravan. Like, 24, like, he's a fetus. He turns 25 this year, fair enough. But he is a ball of clay at this point. And in fairness to the skeptics...
Senecal's 25, actually, by the way. He's about to turn 26.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll check my draft list. I have it in my notes that he's 24. I could be wrong, though.
April 10th, 1999, his birthday.
April 10th, 1999. Oh, wow. Okay, so he's older than I thought. Fair. So he's a year older than Trey Lance, who has 4 years of NFL experience under his belt, which is wild. Regardless, the NFL was obviously unable to mold Trey Lance from a rough ball of clay into a competent quarterback. He was unbelievably bad when given the opportunity to play, which is why he's out so early.
Unbelievably bad. Johnny Manziel was unbelievably bad.
If you read the reports from how he looked in practice, people were surprised that he did as well as he did in games, which is not to say that he did well in games. It was to say that
Allen
he did
Iverson
quite
out
badly
here. We talking about practice?
Well, there's a reason.
Not a game.
There's a reason he's a free agent at the age of 24. And in
a league that needs
quarterbacks more than ever before, nobody wants him. All 32 NFL teams have gone,
Hold on. A lot of the NFL quarterback landscape, I hate saying carousel, but landscape, is on hold because of one guy, Aaron Rodgers. Okay, it seems like he's going to go to the Pittsburgh Steelers, but teams are kind of waiting for him. So I felt like, honestly, trying to keep tabs on this, that Trey Lance might not be neglisted until after that complete situation was figured out.
But if
I still think
a team,
there's a chance that Trey Lance could get signed. But
if there's a team who thinks that Trey Lance has really any chance of being a franchise guy at any point in the future, you think that they're going, well, we could sign him right now because nobody else wants him. But you know what we really have to do? We have to wait for the delusional 41-year-old nut bar to go to Pittsburgh, and then we'll pounce. Like,
I'm saying it was holding up other potential moves, right? Like, Russell Wilson did sign with the Giants.
He did.
We probably shouldn't talk too much NFL here, but there was a holdup for a little bit. And I do see your point. I'm just providing
up,
some balance.
Bottom of the market holdup.
I don't disagree that there was a holdup. I just have a very hard time believing that there's an NFL team or NFL teams waiting with bated breath. They've got the contract drawn up. They're like, oh my God, we need Trey Lance, but we can't do it yet because who knows where Russell Wilson's going to go? Like, I don't see that. If you are a quarterback needy team like the Browns, like the Giants, who, yes, I know have signed two veterans in the last little bit, but don't have a quote-unquote next guy, right? If you're a team that needs a next guy, you should be signing Trey Lance if you think there's any possibility that he becomes the guy. And to a team, all 32 NFL teams have said, nah, we good. Now, on the positive side, one of the challenges I think the CFL has in recruiting players is that they don't know anything about Canada. They don't understand the geography. They don't get it, right? They just don't know anything. I have, for instance, talked to a NFL player who lived in Florida, and I asked him, would you ever sign with the team that's neglisted you? You're on Hamilton's neglist. And he said, no, Hamilton is too far away from my home. And I said, well,
just say who it was.
You played in Seattle, which is a lot further from Florida than Hamilton, and I don't think he understood what I was talking about. But anyway, this is a person from Marshall, Minnesota. He's from a small town not that far from the province of Saskatchewan, and he played collegiately at North Dakota State. Like, this is not someone who's never been...
His dad played for the Riders.
And his dad played for the Riders. Like, this is not somebody who's never been north of Lincoln, Nebraska, and doesn't even know what Canada is, which would be a fair description of a lot of high-profile collegiate quarterbacks. Lesser so, I guess, for NFL quarterbacks, because a lot of them do come somewhat north to obviously play away games in, whether it's Detroit, Green Bay, Buffalo, what have you. But regardless, this is somebody who I think there is a path for. It obviously wouldn't be money related. It's impossible to know what he's made in terms of take home pay, but Trey Lance's take home is probably somewhere in and around $20 million. Could be as low maybe as 16, 17, could be as high as maybe 23, 24. Obviously, that's enough money for him to live very comfortably for the rest of his life. But if he wants to be a professional football player, and he's only 24, so hypothetically he could be for the next 10 or even 15 years, I don't think the CFL would be a bad place for him to come, because it doesn't appear as though NFL teams want him.
Yeah, I think that's the key question, is does Trey Lance really want to be a professional football player? Does he want to play football, or does he want to be an NFL quarterback? Because I think those are two different things. If he is just desperate to get back to being an NFL quarterback, then the CFL is probably not a good fit for him. He should go sign on the last legs of the UFL, where they'll probably give him an opportunity to play right away, put some tape together, and sign the next available backup contract. I think that would be the path back. If he is just sick and tired of not playing and wants to work himself into a situation where he can be a long-term starter, then come up to the CFL, become Trevor Harris's heir apparent. And you're not going to play this year. You might not even play next year, but in two seasons, three seasons, you can develop into somebody that they give the reins to. Does he have the patience to do that on a CFL salary? I think that is the question that has to be answered if the Riders have any communication with him, because a lot of people don't, especially when they've earned the type of money that he has already earned. And it is very different to be in love with being an NFL quarterback compared to being in love with playing football. So that right there is the key question in terms of where he's going to end up.
Do you guys remember in 2018 when Josh Freeman came up for CFL week and then was smoking ciggies outside of a Winnipeg hotel? That memory just came flooding back to me as we were talking about guys just kind of wanting to be some guys wanting to be quarterbacks, and some guys just, I guess I'll keep doing this because I don't know what else to do with my life. Josh Freeman, who was a really nice guy, I did interview him, was, I think, more in the latter category than the former.
That's a great poll. Do we think Trey Lance could fit and play well in the CFL style of game?
Yeah, I think certainly his mobility and size, like there are tools there that could make him look like a prime Kogi Fajardo or like a prime Mike Riley when they were able to use their legs and had tremendous arm strength. Does it all come together? I don't think we'll know until he gets a chance to learn that game. But certainly from a tools perspective, he's just as enticing to the CFL as he was to the NFL. Like, there are intriguing things there.
Yeah, Trey Lance still has the tools to be an NFL quarterback, right? That's the issue. He's never been able to put the tools together, right? He's like, he's less than the sum of his parts. If you just look at him in a vacuum, there's a reason why an NFL team traded a king's ransom to move up to third overall to take him, and that's because he has all of these prototypical traits that are so enticing. His flaw is that he has not been able to translate that into any success. So does he have the tools to be successful in the CFL? Absolutely. I think that's true of the NFL. The issue is that those tools thus far, he's just not found a way to utilize them properly.
The Calgary Stampeders have made significant improvements to the team's operations this offseason. Not only is new turf about to be installed at McMahon Stadium, but there have been upgrades made to the players' lounge, meeting rooms, and weight rooms. The Flames have taken over preparing the Stampeders' food, which will now include hot breakfasts. Hodge, are these improvements enough? And do you think the Stamp... Let's just talk about this first. Do you think these improvements are enough?
You're not Ron Burgundy. Apparently, you won't just read whatever's put in front of you. I do think that these are a huge step in the right direction. I had a nice conversation with Dave and Craig Dickinson at the end of the combine, and I do think that they're doing a good job, right? The CFLPA survey indicated that there were a lot of things that players had issues with. We know that players who have left have been taken aback by the quality of amenities or offerings to players in other CFL markets. Dave indicated that the problem with the previous food vendor is that there would be someone who would prepare breakfast the day before. So presumably this meant, I'm speculating here, but from what we've gathered, laying out boxes of cereal, cutting bagels to be toasted and things like that. And Dave, to his credit, admitted that that's not up to the standard that they want. He also said even 5 years ago, the thought of feeding players was not something that was really in the zeitgeist, at least for them in Calgary. But he said at the end of the day, yeah, we're pulling $10 words now. But he said, you know, in hindsight, he thinks this is a good thing. He said, yeah, you know, we should be treating our players well, and we should be setting them up for success by providing them with proper food and proper nutrition. And obviously, the Flames are going to have good food. I don't know what the Flames eat for breakfast. They've never invited me, but maybe at some point they will. I will also say I am thankful that this story seems to be over now, because I got unbelievably hungry while writing this article, and I got unbelievably hungry this morning while writing about this podcast. And JC's traveled all over the place with me. He knows I'm not a breakfast guy. I generally don't eat anything until maybe 11 o'clock.
You need to eat some breakfast, bruh.
But I get so hungry. I want potatoes. I want eggs. I want cheese. I want breakfast when I report about breakfast. So
you know what would be great marketing?
What's that?
The Stampeders inviting you to taste test and write about the new food they're going to serve.
I would love that.
Et voila.
That sounds great. Any intersection of food and football is basically as good as it can get in my book. So I'm down.
See, the secret, Hodge, is breakfast, I think, is the best meal. It has the best food. But I, like yourself, am not a big breakfast in the morning person. You just have breakfast for dinner. There's nothing better than breakfast for dinner. Get some pancakes on the griddle and eat that up at like 7 p.m. That is the best way to live your life.
No, I love you gotta have breakfast. I don't understand how you guys don't eat breakfast, and you wonder why you fizzle out at the back end of the day and how I have all this energy. You need to get those early energy bites in you, boys. Come on. I've been telling you this for years.
Yeah, you've got like 6% body fat, though, so obviously you have to eat breakfast. I'm 60% body fat. Of course I don't need breakfast. Fair. Plus, it's not like it's if I woke up hungry, I would eat breakfast. I don't wake up hungry. So why would I eat if I'm not hungry? Mm-hmm. That sounds like gluttony at that point. But anyway, the second part of the question was, what do you think the Stampeders will do with their two first round picks? And we believe that they are getting a second first round pick, as discussed on this podcast from the BC Lions. My opinion post combine has not changed. I think the two individuals who are in strong contention for that first overall pick for the Stampeders are Keelan White, the receiver out of Montana, where Dave Dickinson is in the Hall of Fame, and who I mocked to them in my first mock draft, which was linebacker Connor Shea out of Wyoming. To me, it makes a lot of sense for the Stampeders to target one of those positions, neither of which are particularly deep, at number one, because though they really need some defensive line help, just by sheer volume, they're going to have a great defensive lineman to take at 8th overall. If in fact they do end up picking at 8th overall, we should have clarity on that in a week or two. I don't think that this combine shook anything up dramatically at the top end of the draft. I do think that there could be some big changes, implications to rounds 2 and 3. But for right now, I'm calling Keelan White or Connor Shea to the Stamps at 1, and they go D-line at 8.
I will say the only thing that may have shook things up is not the CFL Combine, but the event that happened just before it, which was the Big 12 Pro Day, where Damian Alford goes out there and at 6'6", 224 pounds, runs a 4.46 40. I think that potentially changes some things in terms of where he places at the top of the draft. I know there's some questions about him not playing last year with the Utah Utes, but if you've got that combination of size and speed available, even as someone who's been a little bit more lukewarm on Alfred throughout this entire process, that becomes extremely difficult to ignore.
It's now time for Hodges' Heritage Moment. On this day in 2019, it was reported that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers were exploring hosting an NFL preseason game at what was then known as IG Field. The game, which was eventually held on August 22nd between the Green Bay Packers and Las Vegas Raiders, was played on a shortened 80-yard field without kickoffs when the teams felt unsatisfied with the turf patches that had been installed to cover the spot where the uprights typically sit for CFL games. A little under 22,000 fans attended the game, leaving the stands around one-third empty. We'll start with Justin. What do you remember about this debacle?
Well, we talked about Aaron Rodgers already on this podcast. I remember at the time he was a starter for the Packers, but did not play in that game. John Gruden, I believe, was the head coach of the Raiders. I just remember being shocked that this was even a consideration. And then afterwards thinking, like, this is never going to happen again because it was botched so bad.
Yeah, it was an absolute disaster of an event. But the thing that's always going to stand out for me when I think back to this preseason game, and I'm blanking on which player it was at the time, but I think it was on the Raiders coming off the team playing with his shirt that said proudly on it, Winnipeg, Alberta. Do you guys remember that?
I do. I do.
Who was that? Which guy was wearing that shirt?
I don't remember. You'll have to Google. I remember Aaron Rodgers wore a Canadian tuxedo. That was back when he was likable. And the other thing I remember, this was not public knowledge, I don't think, but shortly after this, I was in the Manitoba Bison's locker room, and they had this large decal of their logo on the floor of the home locker room. And the Raiders, I believe it was, had ruined it. Like, they had stomped all over it with their cleats. And it was pockmarked and dented and miscolored. And they were really upset about it, which, like, yeah, I know you're an NFL team and you probably think of Winnipeg as small potatoes. I get all that. But why are you destroying a collegiate locker room logo? Like, rule number one of the locker room, don't walk on the logo. And it's a big, it's a really nice big locker room. It's actually bigger than a lot of CFL locker rooms. There's plenty of room to get in there and get your stuff. Like, anyway, so that was disappointing.
The Raider in question was then rookie punter AJ Cole III, who wore the Winnipeg, Alberta t-shirt. That is legendary.
And he's now a geography professor at Columbia.
Well, that part's factually incorrect.
Yeah, that was a joke.
Let's go to the 3-minute drill. The Toronto Argonauts officially, finally, named Jason Chavers their co-defensive coordinator. Was that a smart hire?
It was. Not only does Shivers have lots of experience as a DC, but he's a former geography professor at Columbia, which I think will help the team out. No, that last part was a joke. The question I have here, what does Kevin Iben have to do to get this gig by himself? He just made the Winnipeg Blue Bombers offense look stupid in the Grey Cup as part of a co-defensive coordinator cohort with William Fields. He's now out. Jason Shivers comes in. Don't disrespect the Shives, but like, can Kevin Iben get a shout-out? I don't understand it. 2025 CFL draft prospects Hayden Harris and Connor Shea have accepted NFL local pro day invitations. Which of those two is more likely to sign a UDFA contract?
At this point, I'll lean with Connor Shea because I think his numbers from the Wyoming pro day were rather impressive. Hayden Harris has not yet tested. He will have his pro day at Montana on April 3rd, and I'm not quite sure he has the NFL size in terms of his girth. He's certainly tall and long enough, but maybe not thick enough. If he blows up that event at Montana, it could be a whole different equation. The University of Guelph unveiled a new logo for their athletics teams. Is it an improvement over the old one, Dunk?
Yes. But there's so much more that I want to get into, but I'll spare people who are sick of me talking about the University of Guelph. And yes, if any other of the, what is it now, 26 football playing teams in Canada
think it's university? 27.
27? 27 teams that play Canadian university football in this country change their logo, it would be news. We had some reaction on social media saying, is this only because Dunk tries to talk about the University of Guelph all the time? No, it's a logo. It's a complete university rebrand. But the team plays football. It's a major decision. We would do it for any other school. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers unveiled the theme for this year's Grey Cup. Hodge, can you explain to me, what's a Manitoba social?
So a social is essentially a party. It's often held at a community hall. And it's often like a fundraiser for an event, including like a wedding. So you have a social, you get drink tickets. There's usually a silent auction of
Jack
sorts.
Jack and Jill or a Buck and Doe.
In Ontario terms. Do you have silent auctions at those? Okay. Do you have kielbasa that gets served at 11:30 p.m.?
No, but there's usually a snack.
Okay. So yeah, it sounds like that. I don't know what Jacks and Does and Jills and part. I don't know what that is. But yeah, that's a Manitoba social. Manitoba social is the best. You get good music. They will inevitably play Stuck in the Middle with You by Steeler's Wheel. And it costs like a third as much as the bar. It's way better than the bar. The domestic violence charge against former CFL DB DeMiro Houston has been dropped. JC, do you think he'll get back in the league?
I don't know that he will, right? And this has been the flaw with the CFL's gender-based violence policy, is they're extremely unclear about what the policy actually is in terms of when a situation hasn't been dealt with by the courts and then gets dealt with, charges are dropped. Will he be allowed back in? Because the Calgary Stampeders indicated during their last press conference that the league pressured them into releasing him, and they're leaving it up to the league to make the decision onto whether he will be brought back. I think the league needs to be clearer on how they make these decisions going forward. The Blue Bombers have not had contract extension talks with quarterback Zach Collaros. Is that a reason for fans to be concerned?
I don't think it's a reason for fans to be concerned, but I felt it was a pertinent question because Collaros had been signed to a multi-year, three-year contract extension in, what was that, fellas? October 2022, I believe, that topped his salary up to $600,000, made him the CFL's highest paid player at the time. He's now been surpassed by Chad Kelly and Nathan Rourke, although it's still pretty close. But I thought, hey, if you got a guy that you really like who's led your franchise to five straight Grey Cups, wouldn't you want to start those contract negotiations early? But Kyle Walter said, no, they'll likely be dealt with after the 2025 season. Manitoba Premier Wab Canoe apologized for taking a spot on the Blue Bombers charter plane to the 2023 and 2024 Grey Cups. Should he have accepted the seats?
No, because the Ethics Commissioner has the law set in a way where any non-commercial, like any chartered flight that you take as the Premier, needs to be approved ahead of time, and that was not done. That being said, Canoe did pay for these seats on these flights. So it wasn't like he took them for free, which is why the apology came about. But I also don't think that he should be raked over the coals for this. He did not misuse taxpayer dollars. He just didn't do the proper paperwork ahead of time. And the law stipulating this was written in October 2023. So it was fresh hot off the presses when Winnipeg went to the Grey Cup in 2023. So it seems like he's learned his lesson, won't do it again. The Edmonton Elks have signed global kicker Toshiki Sato. Could he win their kicking job?
I think he legitimately could. It will be an open competition between him, Campbell Fair, and Vincent Blanchard, the two Canadians that are currently on the roster. But Sato has spent the last two seasons on the practice roster with the Calgary Stampeders, where he has worked very closely with new Elks head coach Mark Killam, who has every confidence that Sato is good enough from a talent perspective to win that starting job. Tavon Campbell, now with the Saskatchewan Roughriders, will likely be the CFL's first Canadian starter at boundary cornerback in over a decade. Is that significant?
It really is. You know, when we talk about Canadian quarterbacks, Nathan Rourke and Trey Ford being starters and more opportunities for them, and even Canadian running backs with Brady Oliveira doing his thing, I think this has been lost a little bit in the shuffle. Like, if Campbell does indeed start the season at boundary cornerback, and Corey Mace told me that he's the favorite to do so in Saskatchewan. This is a major development. It continues to erase the thought, especially in some American coaches' minds, that there are certain American positions and Canadian positions. And I think Campbell starting there and playing well can go a long way for future Canadian cornerbacks at that short side boundary corner spot. Canadian offensive lineman Cooper Hamilton has retired at age 25. Why, Hodge?
He is pursuing a career in law enforcement, and we wish Cooper Hamilton the best. I do think he would have been in tough to make Ottawa's roster in 2025, but he's still a very decorated OUA offensive lineman, helped the Golden Hawks win a Yates Cup this year and make it to the Vanier Cup. Last one, Canadian defensive back Jet Elad has filed a lawsuit to get another year of collegiate eligibility. Do you think he'll get it?
I think he will, just based on the precedent set by Diego Pavia in terms of getting that JUCO eligibility overturned. Certainly, it'll be the best in the best interest of the kid. Elad's arguing that he could make $500,000 next year in NIL money if he's allowed to go back to school. I'm not sure that he is an NFL prospect, which means he's probably a CFL player. He is never making $500,000 as a Canadian DB in the CFL. Certainly not $500,000 American. So fingers are crossed for him that he gets another shot to play at the collegiate level.
For JC Abbott and Justin Dunk, I'm John Hodge. We thank you as always for listening to the 3 on Nation podcast. We'll see you next Wednesday for our next episode. Take care.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.